Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank
And
you,
welcome, you know, welcome and thank you. I know that we're slightly delayed in starting, but yeah, it's lovely to have you here. And so from here, so we're coming round to part three of our evolving body. And with that, similar to the other formats, we'll go through the main theory or some of the main kind of content of the workshop. And then there'll be a space for informal questions as well, which will be unrecorded at the end. So let us begin. So we've been on, so far we've already had two parts of this. The first part was looking at spinal movement from the ocean onto land. And the second part was the exploration and development of the limbs and their spiral nature. So this one is the third part of the series, and it looks at coming up into the vertical. So I'm going to share my screen now. And so Julian, could you... Hi, Natalia. Hello. If you could enable me to share my screen, that would be great.
Cool. Of course, one second. You are now able to do that.
Great, lovely. Thank you. So I will just jump into this, and we may just have to zip up to there. Wonderful. So this is very much this next stage of our locomotion, which is coming up into the vertical, which if you think of it in terms of, if you just take kind of, for example, a pen, and if this is the top of the spine, all locomotion in the aquatic environment is horizontal. Then in quadrupedal environments, you know, coming out onto land, again, it's been horizontal. And then there's this radical shift of 90 degrees up. And in effect, it's also this shift, it's reorienting within gravity. But you've got this whole shift of the orientation of the spine. And within that, there's a number of adaptations that occurs in the body that we can see in anatomy. And that's what we will be looking at, beginning to look at today. So first off, what I'd like you to do is to become comfortable. So this is just in the summary of that. We've got this migration from the horizontal up to the vertical. And just as we begin the session today, what I'd like to do is just to get comfortable where you're sitting and just take a moment to check into your spine. We will be talking about some shifts through different species, but really it is all in the connection to human evolution and into our own body and into our own anatomy. So from there, what I'd like to do is just take a moment, check into the base contact with the floor. So that will be the sit bones and the weight going through there. And just taking a moment to settle and arrive to this session today as well. And just checking into your breathing. And see if you can breathe down into those sit bones, as if there's roots going down there. Noticing the weight through those two contact points. And as we do this, what I'd like you to do is just drift your attention to the lumbar vertebra. And just see the quality of this lower portion of the spine. Just exploring. Gentle movement through those vertebrae and floating out the question, what is the quality of that vertebra?
You may even find slight variations between the different lumbar vertebra. And it will also vary sometimes between day to day. Just check out what sensations are arising for you today. And following this awareness, just taking your gaze up into the thoracics. So you may want to choose one vertebra or you may want to choose a few. And into this area of the body, just checking into the qualities. How much movement is possible through this part of the spine? You may have a preferred movement direction. Or you may notice qualities on one side. Just notice what is the nature of the thoracics, what can they do? And then from there, coming up to the top, coming up to the cervical vertebra, and really taking a moment to check into the movement, the qualities, and seeing the range of movement. And following any movements that are arising in this part of the spine. Nice. Good. So from there, as we open our eyes, if you've had your eyes closed, and just absorbing this image in front of us, and just checking into these qualities, we will have individual qualities arising in our bodies. But there's also specific with the different areas, so with the lumbars. If we begin to look at the vertebra specifically, then it's a much broader base. The vertebral body is much broader. It is this place of stability. And it really is a place that will anchor some of the weight, and it creates an incredible foundation as a side point of that. Sometimes there's, in comparison to the very top of the neck, there'll be less movement at the base. There's this huge sense of support, the sense of foundation at the lumbars. And then coming up, we've got the thoracics. You may have noticed qualities, slightly lighter qualities, perhaps. Slightly more increased range of motion. We have at this body point, we obviously have the interaction to the ribs and that quality within movement. And then also, then we come up to the neck. And that very much more refined light quality of the vertebra up in the neck. And this differentiation between the lumbars to the thoracics to the cervicals is really something that comes around as the movement comes up to being vertical, to being bipedal. So if we look, coming back to the screen, if we look at the anatomy of the spine and in the human body, we can see, especially if you look at the middle picture here, there is a slightly broader lumbar spine, or even to the picture to the left. You've got this broader lumbar spine, these lumbar vertebrae that are very much in support. They have a strong support function. And then coming up, it becomes more and more refined. You can see on the right, there's a real refinement to the vertebra up in the cervicals. But the main thing to see as well is that alongside this differentiation of vertebra is you also get the S shape coming in to the spine. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit more later today. But just if we look at the vertebra and the shape of the vertebra, we'll really see, if I'm going to flick on to the next one, really, if we look over here at, this is Plesiadipus. This was a species that went up into the trees. So it's a squirrel-like creature. And it still very much had the presence of a tail. Now, if we look in quadrupedal movement, in quadrupedal form, we've obviously got the tail continuing on. But if you look across the cervicals, the thoracics, and the lumbars, there is a small amount of differentiation, but there's not the same for human beings. We very much get this difference. We've got this much broader lumbar vertebra that come in. And so that this differentiation between lumbars, thoracics, and cervicals really show as the system comes up into the vertical. Whereas in the regular, within the quadrupedal spine, it's very much, there's more consistency in the size of the vertebra. So what I like to do is really look. So one of the changes that occurs is this shift in the shape of the vertebra in the spine. But another side of things is actually just looking at the shape of the spine itself. And what I want to do is, if we look across to Plesiadipus, this is the picture from the slide before. This is a quadrupedal mammal. It's around 58 million years ago. So it's after the time of the dinosaurs' extinction. There's this huge radiation of mammals, and a certain group of mammals move up into the trees. And what I'd like to do is just look at particularly the lumbars. So if you look, we've got this C, kind of this almost C curve going round through from the thoracics up here, down into the lumbars. And then you've got this continual movement of the tail coming round. So it is very normal within the evolution of the spine, is as things come up into quadrupedal movement, there are, within these long tail form creatures, there is natural curves through the spine. So typically we have this, there's a slight bend at the neck in these quadrupedal forms, then there's a curve around the spine, and then you've got the tail going up. What we find as evolution continues through to primates, and through not only to primates, but then through to the development of the loss of the tail, what we see in the lumbar spine is we see a flattening. So here in the middle picture is where we have proconsul, and proconsul it's connected to being a great ancestor of all the great apes, including ourselves. And within this, what happens is there is the loss of the tail. And within this, what we see is the vertebra at the lumbars is, rather than that curve coming round that we see in the Plesiadipus in the tail-like form, what we see is a slight flattening. Now, if we continue round, if we look across to the last figure on the right, which is Australopithecus, which is a bipedal hominid 3 million years ago, what we can see is that we begin, it really comes into that shape. Hang on one moment. I'm just going to, bear with me one moment. I'm just going to change something around so I can see. Oop, hang on. Here we go. So what we have is we can see, and this is another example. This is a chimpanzee on the left, but we can see this continuation of the spine up. And then later, as bipedalism establishes and there's a balance of weight coming through the vertical, what we see is the adaptation that occurs in the human body is that this S shape comes into the spine and the lumbars actually come forward. And you can see quite nicely in this middle diagram that you can see as the lumbars are going forward, that you can see the sacrum and the sacrum bone really being the counterpoint. So you can see that the weight through the vertical is really coming. It's really working to balance. So what I would like to do there is coming onto our mats for a moment. I've got a true lovely friend here, I've got a little skeleton here, but we're gonna push him to the side. And coming onto the mats, what I would like to do is just to explore this quality within the spine and just really wake up the lumbars. Typically in our human body, a lot of quite a common condition is for back pain. And this can relate into our body striving to find this balance in gravity in the vertical. And typically what will happen with a lot of back pain, it will be connected to, if you look at the head and neck, as the head and neck comes forward, then there's a curve in the lower spine. So I'm gonna just stop sharing screen and come back. So then we can do some floor work. Oh, I've completely lost you, hang on. There we go, great. So as we come on here, let's go move onto the floor here. Something what I'd like to do is just lie down on the floor and we're gonna get a sense, just lift with the knee up. You'll find that naturally as you lie down, there'll be a slight area between the lumbars. And as we're lying here, what I'd like to do is just initially shake out your body, arrive to the floor, arrive to this moment in time, and just shaking through the hips, shaking through the whole body. And you'll feel the sacrum on the floor. And you'll also feel a little gap just within the lumbars. And what I like to do is, this is something just rocking, just beginning to rock and make gentle contact. So what we're doing here is we're beginning to connect into this these earlier spinal phases. So just making that connection and see, you will be tilting your hips slightly up and you'll be able to start having a little gentle pressure on the floor. And this is something where the floor itself is an incredible feedback mechanism. So you can just roll and just massage the lower part of your back, almost as an exploration. You may find an area is hard to contact, and you can also bring your knees up and just see what contact can you get. You may even find you've got more contact on one side than the other. And just begin to explore this part of the lumbars and have a little wiggle. From here now, we're gonna bring our hands and just clasp the knees and just go from side to side. And it's really an exploration of how we can really gently massage the lower lumbars and the sacrum and the back of the pelvis. And if you're feeling really comfortable and you want to explore this further, you can even lift your shoulders up as well. So you're coming really into a ball. And this is beginning to return to these earlier layers. So before the spine has to adapt to coming up vertical, it's just slowly awakening the lumbars and awakening that original curve through them. Good. Relaxing back down and just let your body find the ground for a moment. For some of you, you might be familiar with, there are sometimes some movement exercises. I'd like to just go through one of these just slowly now. And one of them is, this movement really connects into the tail. And so from there, what I'd like you to do is, if you imagine having a tail, and that tail is going to go up to the ceiling, it might even come up even further, but it rocks the pelvis up, and you're just going to curl the spine up. So you're lifting your pelvis off the floor. And then from there, slowly, one vertebra at a time, while keeping that tail up, slowly bring it back down onto the ground. Good. Have a check into that rock. Get a sense of those lumbars. And again, we're going to engage through that tail, almost as if it's being pulled up to the ceiling, and lift up through the body, lifting the spine off the ground. And from there, again, slowly letting one vertebra at a time go down. And just seeing what that contact's like as your body is lowered back onto the ground. What is your relationship with the lumbars? How is that quality? What kind of tail can you sense today? Good. So for people with which do experience lower back pain, one thing can be, if it's comfortable for them, something that can really be a support is this gentle massage, this gentle exploration of this area to really, and it can be much slower. We're going to move on to the next area of exploring the bipedalism, but really, there can be some very, very juicy unwinding here. And it's something where using your weight through the floor in this way can actually create a really lovely release, because you're in complete control of the amount of weight that you bring through. But it's something that you can actually slow down and really listen and feed back to the contact. So from there, rolling over onto your side, and coming up.
Good. So if you're really welcome to continue following that flow. When you're ready, coming around, I'm going to continue talking, and you can listen from wherever you're lying, if that's most comfortable. But what we find is, with these changes in the spine, around with the reduction of the tail in this quadrupedal experience, so around within the development, within the evolution, we come to proconsul, which is one of the common ancestors for human beings 23 million years ago. Within that species was quadrupedal. There was a loss of the tail. And what we found in doing some movement research and doing some movement work, and actually working with exploring movement through mask, what we found is that
at this point in time, when the tail is lost, there's a really interesting release and an ability of articulation through the neck. So in a lot of bodywork practices, it's well established that there are these interrelationships between the spine. So the top of the spine is actually, it's almost mirrored down into the sacrum. So there's these interrelationships. But what we find in movement research is that this time, when there is this loss of tail down at the base of the spine, there's actually an increased articulation up in the neck. And what that means is that then we're able to move these separate areas of our body, are able to move and articulate. So what I'd like to do now is to move on to, it's a gentle theatre exercise, but it begins to show the way in which we've got these different movement blocks in our body. So from here, what I'd like you to do, and you're welcome when you're ready coming up off the floor, is just to stand and just have your 2 feet wide and feeling your hips as well, and taking it from side to side. So just letting that movement come through. Good. And then from there, making sure you've got enough space, just taking your arms out to the side. Have a nice little stretch, have a nice little wriggle. And when you're settled, then just having it so it's your arms are right out to the side. And what I'd like to do is just, I'm going to move the skeleton first. Good. So from there, just moving your arms forward. So one side and then the other side. You'll have movement through. You'll feel that rotation coming all the way down through the body. Good. And explore keeping your, if you fix your hips, so you've just got the movement through. And this, you can actually fix your head forward and fix your hips forward and explore this movement. And this is quite a base movement for the thoracic spine. And see how that feels on each side. Good. And then from there, we're going to bring our arms, you can keep them out to the side or bring them down to your legs. And from there, you've just got this movement of the neck from one side to the other. Good. And then from there, we're now going to relax everything up. So we're relaxing the head or relaxing down through the body. And we're just going to just shift our weight. So we're just going to shift our weight from one, and we can move. And we're actually changing the, so we can actually have this movement through the hips. We can change the angles of the hips. There. Good. So as you bend your knee, your hips will then face forward that way and this way. So it's really that we've got these two different, we can change, we can swivel our hips on these different dimensions. So from there, what we've got in essence is we've got these three blocks. So you've got the base block here, which connects to the hips. This is that centering one. Then we've got the thoracic block, or the torso in essence. And then you've got the head. And what we have is, so I'm going to show you the full theater exercise and you can play with it as you like. But what we'll have is if you bring your arms to the side here, you can, firstly, you turn your head, turn the body, and then turn the hips. Head, body, hips. Head, body, hips. Head, body, hips. So this, within the analysis of movement in theatre, they like to say, you look, you turn, you go. So there is this, these layers of actions coming through. But it's really, with this, so there's the turn of the head, turn of the torso, and then turn of the body. Within this, and you're very welcome to keep moving and keep playing with those movements through your body, what we have is we have a new level of movement where the head can turn without consequence on the body. And we can see this, so we begin to see this at this point in evolution when there's this loss of tail. There's an ability for the body just to simply be sitting and to look without any implication or influence down through the spine. In earlier species, what would happen is there would be a whole body movement coming around because the spine, the tail would come with it. Whereas with this, we begin to get this quality. And that sounds kind of curious. It sounds quite interesting. I mean, it's very useful to be able to move our heads whilst sitting down. But what's really interesting is as we began to research and look into this, it really seemed that actually that this very beginning, this ability to have isolation and articulation through the body in this way actually enables nonverbal communication. So as we're sitting in a group, we'll actually communicate. We're communicating all the time. Though what we feed off is the point at which where someone looks and why and when. So if a sound suddenly happens over in the trees, then someone looks. And then it depends, it's all of this articulation around the head that actually connects into it's the base level of our nonverbal communication. And it's this which is the first layer, really, that we see in relationship to body language. So it's quite an interesting development that around that time, this change, this shift in anatomy actually causes these new layers of communication to begin. Good. So from here, I'm gonna go back to sharing the, if I can, maybe I can't, one moment. Julian, can I pause for a second? Has anyone got any questions?
Yeah, sure. How is everybody doing? I managed to get Raluca. I've been trying to gather our community back into your Zoom. My fault.
Has anybody
got any questions? And Raluca's got her camera on. I wonder if you're going to do some great. More movement.
I'll say, Julian, if you know, it's absolutely fine. We can answer questions as well at the end. It's just if anyone, as we're going through, there's quite a nice pause moment here. If there are any specifics that are coming up for people, but equally we can move on.
And if you want to do that in the chat,
Good. I'm going to keep a momentum then. Great. And so from here, you can see this. Let's go in there. Great. So we've been exploring the S-curve. So this ability, this three block movement that we began to move into and explore is very much, I'll give you a bit of an insight into some of the movement work and some of the background to this has been this project that related into studying the different layers of movement in species from mask and movement. And so I think I've put a few photos in here. Yeah. So this is a mask of Proconsul. And it was, working with a number of theatre groups, looking at the layers of movement that arise within mask state. So what also happens here is, so we can see there's this, what is really interesting was at this specific point that then there is this opening up of the neck. And within that, there was a number of different improvisations, there were these patterns that arose across multiple groups, all connecting into articulation around the head and those layers
how it influences relationship. But also at this time, what's quite interesting, maybe I'll move back. Also at this time, and you can see it a little bit over here, up in the top one, is that, so these are white masks. They show the shape and they are studying the shape of the face and the movement that can come out of it. But what's really interesting, I'll just say with this species, is that there is this shift from the foramen magnum, the hull, which where the spinal cord goes through, from towards the back of the head in within proconsul to within bipeds over around 7 million years ago, it comes underneath the head. So there is a shift in the foramen magnum as we come into bipedal movement. And it's an essential thing within. We need clear connection through the spine. And so that very much shifts, the whole head orientation shifts around.
Vicky, can you repeat that?
Yes, so the foramen magnum.
Sorry.
No, that's absolutely fine, great. So the foramen magnum, the hole in the back of the head, I'm trying to think if I've got a skull of proconsul on here. I don't think I have. Bear with me one moment. Okay, here we go. This one's gonna be a good one, there we are. Okay, good. So from here, what we have is, so within the middle picture, you've got proconsul, and what is at that point, you've got quadrupedal movement and the head, it's very much the spine is coming into the, it's almost at the back, it's at the back of the head rather than underneath. Whereas there's a shift, it's a change of, basically there's a slight change in the brain structure, in the head, the cranial shape shifts, and it kind of expands up so what happens is that there is this change from the foramen magnum being located at the back, it goes underneath. So there is a slight change. If you see you've got the eye level. So if the eyes are going out that way, the foramen magnum goes from being back here to in humans and in bipedals being underneath. So it moves from kind of that angle there within the quadrupedal movement, and there's a migration around to this location there. Is that clear? Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, perfect. Great. So that's what we found in this. This is something that was a really interesting question, is how the different movement layers through the spine occurred in the different, what was needed. It wasn't possible to wear it on the front of the face for the spine movement to come through properly. Good. So from there, so we've looked at, just to recap a little bit, we've had a change. What we see primarily is we see this change in the shape of the vertebra. So the differentiation from the lumbars, thoracics, and the cervicals. We also see the change in the curve come in, and one of the main shifts is the introduction to the S curve and the lower backs, the lumbars coming forward to balance in gravity. And we also see this impact of the tail and its connection up to the head and its the articulation of the head. But there are a number of other things that occur as we come into the vertical field. And hang on as I go up. Mm-hmm. Great. And I'm gonna sit back here actually, put it in big. And that is, what's happening is that the one of the key forces is gravity, and there are certain feedback mechanisms within this. And something I'd like to put in or layer in is looking at our energy field. One of the key things I've mentioned earlier was that what's happening is you have this massive shift of the spine going up around there. But what's really interesting is that's the spine is quite an important structure connecting into the energy field. And so what we have, you can see on the right, you can see this, the energetics around this. We've got this Taurus energy field in effect. And what I'd like to connect with is actually, what is it to have this, what is it to be aligned vertical? What is it to be, to have a vertical kind of energy field? And one of the key places that we can learn and explore a bit more around this, an amazing organism out there, is the tree. And maybe you can even see in this picture on the left, there's a tiny human being standing at the bottom of one of those trees. And what is really interesting is the alignment with the gravitational field, but also just this quality of what is it? What is this quality coming up through the vertical? There's a number of, we connect in down to the gravitational field down, and there's also a reactive force coming up. But within that, and I saw this really lovely picture over here. So look, if you mainly look at the picture to the right, we all have, there are energy fields around us as human beings and also around trees. And if you want to tune into that, like how it is to be in a vertical energy field, you can literally go and stand, especially if you're in the best place to go and find a vertical field to stand in is if trees are very, very close together. So if you've got a lot of very, very, and there are obviously different types of trees as well. But if you go for like a very, very dense forest, which has got a lot of these vertical trees, then there's something really fascinating you can do. And it's something that I was told about a long time ago, and I started, I went off and experienced it, and it was amazing. And it's something which is just fascinating. And we can explore things a little bit now, which is just coming up. So one thing you can do as you're there and as you're in, next time you're in a forest and you're around a number of trees, is just to start to explore this. You've got this vertical contact down, you've got the vertical weight, but also you can just begin to float your arms up. And just as you release down, just let the arms float up. Now, at this moment in time, you'll probably be standing in your living room, and it's just you standing in your living room. But if you start to do this in a forest, what's really interesting is that there's actually a lovely support through the arms, and you'll find that you can actually relax and have your arms up within this field for much, much longer than if you're just in a place without trees. So there is something where there's an interaction between fields. And so there is this incredible vertical field that comes up through trees. And I really invite you to go and explore it. I remember a long time ago, I thought, wow, that's really unusual. I don't know. I've not had any experiences around that. And then more recently, it's been something that I've explored more and more. And it's really something I've felt. So I'll only share it with you because it's something that's been very, very strong there. And within that, there's also, I mean, I'll say in connection to that, I recommend that the bottom, these drawings are really on experience. It's something that it's just from a random Facebook post, actually. And I can't track down the original source of it, unfortunately. But there is something about tuning into this vertical. And I'll also note, and this is a bit of a segue, but I'll put it out there, which is that what I've found as well is connecting into this vertical is that our cycles as women can also relate into it. And I'm sure there's cycles within men as well, even though they're less physical, they're less dominantly physical, that there is this, within the menstrual cycle, there is this release and letting go down to the ground. And within that, what I have discovered is that when there is menstrual pain, that if you go and sit next to a tree, it will disappear. And it's something around being grounding down and being in this vertical field that actually there's then this energetic release down. So I highly encourage, I highly recommend, if you're open-minded and you're wanting to go and explore this quality of a vertical energy field, I highly recommend going and finding some good trees or some good forests to do that. So that is a connection across into the vertical energy field. But what I'd also like to base back to is really this study of being aligned within gravity is present within many, many physical practices and many movement practices. And so one of them we see obviously is something called Rolfing or structural integration that was developed by Dr. Ida Rolf. And in a similar connection to, as we see within the S shapes coming through the spine, this balance in the vertical between the front and back and side to side, there are practices, things like structural integration, really see that as when there is a balance through the vertical, then the body is using less energy to maintain upright. You get a flow up through the body. So we can see there's one or two, especially, I mean, it's shown in this diagram over here, this kind of little sketch, the concept of really when there's high compensatory organization of the blocks of the body and how that typically within the practice, so within structural integration, it's something that I've practiced for a number of years. Typically when people come in with specific conditions or issues, typically injuries will link to areas of compression or rotation. And when that's released and when things are come into stronger alignment, then that's the body is able to have a more stable organization and the pain then goes away. So in connection to that, we come up to the vertical and I'd like to float one or two ideas out around our human body, which is that as we come up to the vertical, what's really interesting to note in the human body structure.
Vicky, we lost you.
Oh, hello.
I didn't lose
her. We lost the voice.
Have you still got me?
No.
Yeah, I can still.
Okay, people. Yeah, good. All right. You still got me? Is that right?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So just to float out. Firstly, within the development, what we also find is not only within organization, within the gravity, within the vertical field, we then have organization of the structures in the transverse. So what we find is there are the transverse fascial bands. And this is, if you're curious about this, I'd recommend going and checking out the Endless Web book. And that's very much in a fascia. So that's typically, Lewis Schultz is talking about the surface, the superficial fascia here. So that's one area that we find this transverse ordering. And another one is within the diaphragms. And I will confess, I don't have a really, I can't find a really great diagram of the human body to show all these different diaphragms. So what I'm gonna do is instead, I'm gonna talk you through them, which is in a connection to, so what we find, so you'll know when I say diaphragm, you'll think, right, yeah, we've got the respiratory diaphragm here. And that's definitely one of them. But there's also a connection, there's a thoracic, there's a dome here, there's a thoracic a dome. You've also got the pelvic floor, which is also a dome. And within that, there's alignment of up into the palate is another of the domes of the body. And also you've got the cranial, you've got the reciprocal tension membrane and the dome of the cranial vault. So within that, we've got these domes, this dome formation that comes up. There's this interrelationship with this lift that comes up through the body. You may if you have done a lot of work within the chakra system, you may also see that there is this, it's almost like these gateways at the different chakra points through, and there's an organization up through there, and they're almost like gateways which will open and close. So these are some things just to float out, that as the body moves from quadrupedal movement in the horizontal up into the vertical, that there are these kind of finer layers of adaptation that can occur across as the body is reorientating within this vertical field. Good. So
Vicky, there's a question just going back to the verticality of trees from Raluca on how hugging a tree, is it melting with the tree? It's in the chat, her question. Just how would you describe, I think she's asking, how would you go about coming into a relationship with the tree, with hugging? Is it melting? Can you see the question?
Yeah, I can't see the question at the moment because my screen is showing me just the PowerPoint. But so typically in terms of, so you can be in connection in physical contact, and you can just stand or sit next to a tree that has a kind of a strong effect. Within all of this, if we start looking in the world of energy fields, it takes about 5 or 10 minutes for things to settle in a physical sense. So it's something where there is this natural, this can happen in, say, for example, when you're sitting next to a tree, it will, you know, kind of, it can also happen if you put your body in a physical position for meditation, then it will actually, things will start calming, but it will start calming over about 5, 10, 15 minutes. And it's something, it's where it's this kind of energy feedback within the body, really. And it also happens when working with clients as well, is that there's this settling of the biospheres. And so that will happen as well. Yeah.
So there's another question, but I thought I'd mention that I think I recognize the artist of these.
Do you tell me, please? I'll be able to quote them.
Yeah, it's very distinctive style. And I think these come from the books of Mantak Chia and either Chini Tsang, Abdominal Chinese Massage. They're definitely, I'm 99.9% sure that I've forgotten the artist's name, but I can easily look it up. He's the artist in all the Mantak Chia books. And this microcosmic orbit where the character is sat on a block, that's distinctive of that artist. And also the face and head looks like the younger Mantak Chia, the Taoist master teacher. That's why the artist has drawn that man like that who's standing near the tree. Yeah, it's definitely him. So we can easily track that down.
And could you just put the book in?
Yeah, I'll do that now. I'll put them in the chat.
Put a note, because it's a phenomenal work, and it's definitely something where
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really it's just beautifully summarized. So yeah,
it is. And the other question is, do you have movement classes online? And we're looking with Vicky to offer some through the Embodied Health as a regular thing. And I think the 24th of November. We invite you all, if you're members of eHealth Learning, to come and join Vicky and a few of us. We're going to do some movement for a whole hour or an hour and a half. But we would like to do a more regular thing. So thank you for that question. And at the end, if you have other places that you're doing it, but we would love to host you to do more movement-based slowing and enjoying all this lovely stuff you're sharing in the course more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yes. 24th. Check it. Yeah. Come and join.
7 o'clock, 24th of November.
Yeah. Very
evening.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So what I'd like to do is just, we're coming towards the end, but there's one or two more things I'd like to mention. And one is just to recap a little bit into hands. We covered this last week a little bit. We started to explore the connection between contact and how, and also floating out the idea that actually our hands and feet may have been originally a quite a dominant sense, you know, in connection with the way in which the body maps occur with them, but also just this sense of actually, in our world, we know we use our hands and feet in a very different way, but actually as we start to connect back to the ground, they are actually an incredible connection for our body. They really restore health, and they're incredible tools. So what we saw, we're going to just have a moment just reconnecting into the hands and feet on the floor. But what I'd like to do, and you can see some here, is really just to say, as things have shifted from this quadrupedal movement on the ground, what there is there's a very slow migration up to actually using, there's a shift in weight. And then there's, even in the earliest mammal, we begin to see that there's balance on the back feet, balance in, you know, kind of through the feet, even if it's just for one or two moments. And then this increases over time. And then obviously going from quadrupedal movement, there's this idea that actually there's this movement and these balance positions occurred up in the trees. And that was really the step, that was the linkage between this kind of quadrupedal movement down, where the spine is kind of horizontal, coming around, that this migration actually happened in the locomotion in the branches. And that was something that came around. And then actually at one point, then the balance came through. But in connection to that, what we have is we've got our hands and feet that have got this ability to support. And we all felt that quality of support coming through, but also that quality of being, of sensing, of being, you know, kind of tactile, being able to actually give us information on the environment. And now as things have gone back, as we step back and as we walk through life all the time, what's now happening is these, our hands and feet are pretty much the same, but, and yet we're now using our feet purely for support. And we're using our hands as our tentacles, as our sensory, as purely kind of sensory contact, light touch. And this is also the root of being able to then do things like, you know, kind of therapies, or being able to use our hands to palpate and to sense things. And so there is this shift, there's a shift back. And that's something that's occurring in bipedalism. So what I'd like us to do is just to check back and reawaken again those feet of ours. And maybe you can see, I'll just shift this down a bit more. And just having a moment. Some of the things we were doing last week may have filtered in as well, but just checking in firstly to the sensory, the quality, the touch, what you get from the surface with your hands. And then the same thing, so checking into the surface with your feet. And I always find this is less common. This is always a bit of a new thing, a bit of a challenge. You may want to check out different surfaces. And waking up the toes as well. So beginning to just wiggle those toes and wiggle the fingers. And as you do this, just checking into weight. So taking a little bit more weight onto the hands, and maybe taking one foot up and off, and then changing over. And then from here, just exploring, experimenting that quality of taking weight into your hands. And you may want to float out that experience from the last session as well, which is bringing, really spreading those fingers and letting the ball of your hands just really take that weight. You might want to lift the thumbs off, but just noticing how that is, and then almost maybe bringing a little bit of a bunny hop or a move of just bringing more weight, leaning in. Just noticing how it changes the sensory experience. And from there, then transferring the weight back onto your feet and lightening the touch of the hands. You may feel there's more sensory experience available. Through the hands, and you can, then we have, with this shift of weight back, not only do we have the hands becoming dominantly sensory, but we also have this differentiation through the body. Within the Rolf work, a lot of times they'll relate to the base and the legs as being, and the hands, the arms, and the upper part of the body as doing. So what we have then is we have these two halves, the being, support, grounded, fixed, and the doing, the movement, the upper half. So this is, that is, that's something just to acknowledge. And from there, so this is one of the consequences of our really coming up into vertical, is that these hands and feet, which are in essence, in some ways they are the same, now become wildly differentiated. And within that, one other thing that occurs is that, and we've mentioned some of this before a little bit, is this idea of the back of the body being the yang side and the front of the body being the yin. If you think of it in terms of protection, the back of the body in all modes, especially, for example, in quadrupedal movement, where you've got the base, you've got the front, this soft part, where we've got all of the viscera, we've got all of the organs, this is quite a vital part. It's a very vulnerable part of our body. It has been close to the ground. It's been deeply protected around from that back part as quadrupedal motion has been present. And what happens is, as we go from the horizontal up, we are then meeting the world with our soft side, and some of the consequences of this. And I'll refer, and these images may seem unusual, but this comes from an area of mask work. But typically what is really interesting is that as movement comes up vertical, and as there is this soft side to soft side in relationship and in meeting and interaction, what happens in the world of mask is that you'll see these leather masks over on the left. There's something called the neutral mask, and they show emotions and archetypes in them. As the mask of the animal, which is us, comes down onto here, onto the face, and as there is this soft side revealed and shown, what's really interesting within mask work is that this is the time when emotions start to show in the masks. And so there's a layer within all the previous animal masks. There's not that relationship to emotion. And there's something about being able to read or connect in with that front side, this visceral part of our body, really communicates on an emotional level in a new way. And within that, alongside, what we found is that there's a whole myriad of complexity that comes with this move to bipedalism and this relational field through this soft side. Also, alongside that, there is the development of hierarchies and roles and dynamics, which is unseen in any of the previous movement work. So it's something which is, it leads to a number of questions, which is, how do we connect and read a human being when we communicate with them in a physical way? And there is something around this that we've brought. There is more of a reveal. There is a more of a connection. And there is in some ways this layer of emotion and dynamic that connects, that occurs within the within our human network, within our human society, which isn't present in the other species before. So that's something which is there, this turning point of coming up and revealing the soft side actually connects across into quite a huge jump in complexity in terms of dynamics and communication. So so that is predominantly it. What I would like, as we come towards the end, I just want to, I love this photo, but also I want to just really reflect that I remember when first, you know, kind of coming across evolution, it really hadn't connected that we come from the ocean, and yet it is so deeply within us. And so within this journey, we've gone all the way from the, go through this journey, what we have is we can see everything from the aquatic movement in the oceans, the dynamics and stages that occur as we move onto land, and some of the effects of the forces that locomotion is within. And then this final standing up, it makes me utterly amazed to be, you know, kind of how our bodies have adapted, and some of the consequences which can come from literally the simple, you know, locomotion within forces. And so here we end with standing within the vertical and exploring our vertical fields alongside the ability to actually connect in to all those previous layers that lie before us. So what I'd like to do is open things up for any questions and any other things. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Vicky. It's amazing. So he's called Xuan Li, the artist, illustrator, and he's illustrated most of the Mantak Chia books. And I've linked two books there, which probably are likely to be the ones that artwork's from. But Mantak Chia's, to me, like the Asian Taoist version of Leon Chaito. He still is a great synthesizer of information, and he loves the cranial work and the cranial pumps. And in Chinese, that's called the one in the cranium along that foramen magnum position. Yeah. He calls the emerald pillow, or not he does, Taoism has done, emerald pillow, the cranial pump in the cranium of the cerebrospinal fluid. So I encourage people to check out that guy's artwork and some of the books by Mantak Chia.
Thank you. Thank you for tracking that down, Julian. That's great. Thank you.
That's a pleasure. I feel I owe it to you for being late.
That was an unusual improvisation.
And there's a question there on Vicky. Within the mask work, does the wearer get to see themselves in the mirror, or do they just get the visual feedback of the other group members' expressions and movement?
Yeah, so I'm going to say that in most regular times, that it is that they can see the mask before they wear it. They can, sometimes they can see themselves in the mirror, sometimes they can't because they literally don't have any eyes in the masks. And but there's also an area of exploration which I've done with a group of a few workshops where performers have put on the masks without ever seeing them. So they've not even seen them, you know, by holding them. They have been blindfolded, put on the masks, and then they've gone out and they've played them. And what's really interesting is that there's a biofeedback mechanism. And I'm really curious on what layer this relates to, because it's non-verbal. So there's no feedback of, oh yeah, that's working, do this, do that, da da da. But what was really interesting, so these a group, there were five of them, five performers, put on these masks, turned, were just there looking through these masks, and then they slowly found that over about 5 minutes, their bodies changed into the characters of the masks, which is really interesting. And then we ask them questions like, who just different character traits, or like, who's old, who's young, who's this and that. And they put up their hand accordingly. It was really interesting. And that was all done without any words. It was done, there was feedback of like laughing and, you know, or people looking or like, or, but not anything. It was all, yeah, it wasn't totally silent, I think, but there wasn't any words. And it was really interesting because what I find in mask is I think there's a very interesting connection between mask and the vagus nerve in relationship to, in many different layers. But one is that when working in mask, we relate, I think there's feedback, this silent feedback, this feedback that happens between an audience and performer. It's not happening through words, it's actually happening through subtle shifts in the body and through a physical sensing. So I don't think it's possible to do it via Zoom. Like that's just not a thing. Because what you literally have another animal there watching you, and you can feel it, and you can, I think there's a meeting of fields, and what's really interesting is you can pick up what someone else is sensing. And so there are these things, and that feeds into this loop. And it, from working in the animal masks side of things, a number of those masks are blind completely. So the performer can't see out. And as a result, and that all happened the same. Like there's a sensing, it brings, as a performer, it brings a performer into a real state of presence of just literally alert listening, which we don't have that much in our human lives that much. Yeah, does that answer?
It's fab. Natalia said systemic field resonance, perhaps, as in systemic constellation work.
Yes. I would love to hear more in that realm, because it's something, this is a phenomenon that's showing up, and it's not fully explained. Like it's not fully, there's stuff there that's happening that I just don't think's been looked into enough, really. So yeah, it's quite early days in terms of those observations. I'd love to hear more on the resonance work. I think that's, yeah, it's definitely something present.
Mm. Yeah. She says, must be very powerful to experience that, as we're so visual, especially now that we rely on screens, sadly. Big fan of systemic work here. Yeah, I've noticed a lot of sensing is possible in Zoom. I know the feeling of, through martial arts, of different trainings in ninjutsu, we were training the back of our body to sense things, for example. And Philip Shepherd trains the back body a lot, which I love, receptivity in the back body. And with mirroring, there's things we can do with Zoom, but certainly there's a different sense when a live animal is looking at you in person.
Yeah, but also just to say this, the back body, this is really key in terms of like, in terms of the quadrupedal movement this way, there's a balance between the front and back in a sensing. But what's really interesting is we shift up here, all of our senses, we've now got a dominant orientation of a lot of our senses all go forward. And we've very much forget this back. And it's really interesting. There's, I know within Philip, he'll connect it as well to more connecting to the future as opposed to the past. And that connects into from the first session that we were doing, this notion that from studying this work in this way, I have that little theory of like, there is this, that actually our brains were able to perceive, or the perception of chronological time, that notion actually evolves as a result of movement. And that then the development of the past and the future in our movement patterns.
That past and future thing, you've brought focus to that. I'd like to share that myself on the 24th, is a full body pendulum that we can do, like dowsing. We were taught it at the University of Westminster. So I'm going to share something on that, but asking the question about what is our yes and what is our no And seeing if it's a rotation or a forwards or a backward movement in the full body response, settling in, as you say. And it's interesting when we do that, when we do that on the 24th, as to then just asking the question, do I dwell more as a pattern on things from the past, or do I have anxiety or anticipation or a strong focus on the future? Mm-hmm. And can we balance those by receptivity in the back line to being more present, or can we calm the propensity to be moving forwards? If it's very interesting to see what's live in the body and how it guides us. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So one more question there. Let's see. Chat. The exercise to imagine we have eyes on the back of our head was intriguing. Yeah. Mm. Looking upwards. Joanne Averson yesterday, Vicky, I don't know if you watched that webinar, was saying that the arching in the mammalian transition from fish onto land, because they came across mudflats, they had to lift up and try and get a sense, and then the eyes came, I guess, and this arching spine of having to navigate terrain that was up and downy, whereas in the water, obviously there were obstacles in the water, rocks and reefs and stuff, but she was explaining it's an interesting co-emergent sharing the two of you are doing in your two different courses, hers bio-emotional breath about the biological emotional movement, and yours, you're both talking about vertical and horizontal and coupled movement. It's really beautiful to be a host to both of you speaking about these things. It's really, really rich.
Mm. Yeah, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. And it's the thing about the consequence of gravity coming up through.
Yeah.
It's very much looking at which species, like how it evolved through. Yeah, certainly with I remember with the very earliest form, Tiktaalik, there is this notion that actually they're not sure how much movement would have come through the spine within this forward undulation. And that actually it may have just been very early on that it acted like the spine ended up just acting like a rod. And it was very much just this movement through, because it could only do that sideways undulation. So we should chat, and connect more about it. Yeah, I think that's really interesting ideas out there.
Quite spooky, actually, the dance between your, because her course started yesterday and she's talking about the domes, and she they just fit really well together. I think we should partner them up as a bundle, because you guys are weaving and dancing with each other, and perhaps you're not even aware of it.
There we go. Yeah, maybe we're channeling the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is the crossovers are very rich in that way.
They are very rich. Yeah, so I recommend this course with blending them both, and let's get you both back to do something either as a webinar or as a series.
Yeah,
it's all very exciting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Great.
So I'm mindful that some people missed today's session because of my late arrival. So I'm going to make an effort once Andrea's back to invite them to the 24th. So perhaps we could have a short Q&A on the 24th for people from this course and invite everybody back to do some more movement work with us that evening, if that's okay with you, Vicky.
Yeah, just to say, I know one participant couldn't make it and emailed in advance, and really specifically wanted a clear email out of the recordings, because there wasn't a clear link to where she could access things. So if you could send that out to all participants.
Yeah, we are actually changing the whole system because we're aware that for some people it's not clear. Anyway.
So maybe I don't know if there's a one-off ability to just put the three links and send it via email, just so it's really accessible and easy to click.
Well,
that would be great.
The only problem with that is they're then shareable to everybody. I do that in emergencies. They need to log into their members area and to the course area where everything is there. But we can help them to get there. No problem. We can support people. Great. And we're gonna make it easier in the future. In fact, we're already building the new future of easier findability.
Wonderful.
Cool. Thank you, Vicky.
Well, as we wrap up, I just want to say thank you for being here. You know, participants, it's really lovely to see you, Natalia, Sarah, Adili, really lovely. And it's been good. If you've got any further questions or any final things, then do answer, do ask. But it's been really wonderful. I hope you've enjoyed it. And
To say thank you, that it was very interesting. And I think that there is something that you can look into is the orientation response that is much more pronounced with mammals than with reptiles, because I think that they don't have this neck part that we have, the cervical. So it's an advance in evolution that you can, when you orient, you can pause, but then go back to less energy because everything is okay. And you don't immediately have to go to either fight, flight, or... And it's something that comes with mammals. And with babies, you see it also, like after 2 months that they are born, they have this orientation response.
So I'm curious, because there's... Do you know Stephen Porges' work?
Yeah, I do the SSP also, and of course.
great. There was a time, or I think it was over in 2015, and he referred to, he actually has this great chart that relates to when the different parts evolve.
Yeah, and the dorsal vagal.
In terms of the early, the freeze response in the parasympathetic, that's early in the tetrapods, and then later you've got kind of the development sympathetic in mammals, and then much later there is the kind of the parasympathetic rest and digest, kind of the myelinated vagus. It's really interesting, but he maps it to the species, like he maps it to approximate times across evolution, and that's an interesting one. But I'm going to write this down: orientation response. Yeah.
It's something that babies have after 2 months of birth. Like in the beginning of the pregnancy, they only have the dorsal, which is like retracting and constricting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then when they are born, they have the motor reflex, which is sympathetic, like that. And then at 2 months, when they hear a big noise, then they would just pause for a minute, look, and then if it's something that they need to help, they will cry, but otherwise they will just go back to whatever it is that they are doing.
And amazing.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Peter Levine also taught about this, I'm sure, because I've filmed Kimberly Ann Johnson demoing the, what did you just call it again? Sorry, this response.
Which one? Orientation?
Yeah, I've filmed someone demoing because they were taught by Peter Levine, demoing the orientation response and how it works with the ears pricking up and the head turning and then settling back down. I could see if we could share that. I found it on my computer just the other day, actually. Awesome.
Yeah, and we're just starting a new training of somatic experiencing today in Israel. So it's in my mind, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I think that orientation is not enough explored and get the, the healing effect that we can have if we just like recuperate it and...
Response flexibility, isn't it? Response flexibility. Yeah.
And the connection of that to the vagus nerve also. You can see it in Stanley Rosenberg's book also, the healing power of the vagus. It talks a lot about the movement of the neck. Okay, I will not keep you longer.
No, that's great.
Thank you. It was amazing. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you all. And keep in touch. And I look forward to seeing you on the 24th if you can make it. And be well.
Yeah, I'd like to make that available to everyone on this course. So if you're not a member, make sure you email info or julian@ehealthlearning.tv. And we'll give you access to that evening's movement exploration. But it's normally for members only. But we want to do more with you, Vicky, on this theme. Thank you for these three sessions and we will speak soon, and we will see everybody hopefully on the 24th at 7 o'clock UK time.
Yeah.
Great. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.
Brilliant. Thank you. Bye.
Pleasure.